Live from Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carl, I'm the BBF Keon. Keon, how's it going?
Hello, it's going good. Things are well in the world. How about you? Well, not all over the world, obviously, but...
You don't think everything's going good in the world, or...?
Square meter of space on that is on top of the earth. It's going pretty okay. How about you?
Doing pretty good. Just ready to talk about all the news that came out this week.
Oh yeah,
so much, dude.
It's so new.
It's news. How's the Stackers doing this week?
How are the Stackers? They seem okay. I think they're doing all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know in what way they might not be, but as far as I know, they're doing okay.
Cool. Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We have a lot to cover. A lot of news came out this week. A lot of big news. The SEC stuff came out. Peter Thiel's on a rampage again.
Is he?
Yep, he's back on it.
What rampage is it this time?
Same thing. Talking about the Antichrist.
What? I can't hear you.
He's talking about the Antichrist.
Oh. He's still...
He's on one.
Lecturing on it.
We're going to talk about that. The Visa CLI stuff is happening. I don't know if you saw that.
I did see it, yeah.
It's a lot of stuff we're going to cover. Let's jump into the number three top story this week. It's called Club Economists 11. This is an unfortunate example of how normies view capitalism from Simple Stacker. March 19th, 23 comments, 4,890 sats. Keon, what's going on with Simple Stacker this week?
Yeah, I guess Simple Stacker read a post from some, kind of a review of Pokemon Pokopia. And the person who wrote the article was happy that you couldn't sell anything. And it was had a communist economy. And that frustrated Simple Stacker because it, even though they were just talking about a video game, they seemed to really enjoy that it, they had an anti-capitalist slant in this review of the video game, and we're kind of celebrating how great it is to not have profits and to not have to buy things and to not have to pay for things and that restriction. And it frustrated Simple Stacker because he is kind of coming to grips or facing yet again that people don't appreciate what function capitalism serves, why we have it, why it produces much of what we, or it better than any other system, delivers us value over and over and over again. He has a three-step process with which he teaches his students, why capitalism, and he says that, or economies in general, he says, prices reflect social value. Profit is what you make when you turn something that has a low price, a low value, into something that has a high price or a high value. And so that difference is profit. And so when you create profit, you create value. And so profit isn't, something that is kind of gross or something that we should be skeptical of people when they seek it. It means that they are trying to create more value from something from something that is relatively nothing. I thought that was succinct and nice. And so, So if you apply it to something like communism, if you're not allowed to make profit, or you cap how much some profit someone makes, what you're saying is that we want to prevent value from being created, more or less, and we want to cap how much value is created. And so that's why you end up with kind of a worse outcome in those systems. And it's like, it's that simple, but it's still kind of convoluted, I think. Like, to try, like, people want like a one sentence explanation of something, and if you can't deliver it in one sentence, they just kind of reject it.
But it's fascinating how most people don't know about this stuff. Like, and I feel like for me, like, I felt like I had a good understanding of it growing up, for the most part, but it wasn't until, you know, really started running my own business that I started realizing that, like, you can't just depend on, like, you know, the good graces of humanity to assist you. You actually have to go out and, like, produce something of value and then charge for it. And there's really, I don't know of a better way of learning how capitalism works other than starting your own business. Maybe you can learn that in the books, but it doesn't really teach you the struggles when it comes to it. But it's good to see a post like this, because I don't think anyone really talks about this inside the Bitcoin space currently right now.
Yeah, well, I think it is econ 101, I think, or maybe not 101. I don't know when this would be taught in an econ curriculum, but it is pretty early stuff. And so when Bitcoiners talk about things, they kind of talk about what's kind of currently going on and not the fundamental basics over and over. Because no one, especially, I mean, the people who are familiar with this stuff don't need to hear it. And the people who aren't familiar with it are probably never interested in becoming familiar with it, for the most part. Maybe Bitcoiners should be, though.
I feel like there was a time when you would talk about these things, but I don't think people understand the gravity that comes with understanding this stuff. I think people think they understand this stuff, but I don't think they actually understand this stuff. It's more like a hand wave. You think, oh yeah, we know, we got to make profit, and yeah, we got to sell things, but I don't think they actually know.
You know, yeah, they haven't like lived with the experience. Maybe if that's the difference between knowing and not knowing. A lot of people don't really have that experience, because most people are employed by one organization or another. I mean, many people employed by governments, and it's even a little further divorce from like the consequences of creating and the benefits of creating value or not. So
yeah, then you even see how that can, you know, we were talking about the other day, that can kind of bend people a certain way because they don't want to ruffle the feathers that are feeding them, right? It creates weird perverse incentives all the way up and all the way down sometimes, and that's unfortunate because it is from a place of goodwill, I would imagine. But
the further away you are from reality of things like this, the more you're going to drift from the benefits of them and the consequences. The reason why you might not want to participate in the reality of this is because you don't want to deal with the consequences of it. But the trade-off is you're also not dealing with, you don't also most likely don't get the benefits of it either. And so that...
I equate it to like having a... What do you call it? What do you call that when you go in the water? It's called a safety vest.
Floaty?
Floaty, yeah, I equate it to that.
It's kind like floaty.
You won't really know how to swim until you remove the floaty. And then what you'll do is you'll find a way to float, turns out, or you won't and you'll die. Which are both great ways of discovering yourself.
Well, I think I think if I were inside of this analogy, if I were to like channel a communist, they would say, well, we don't. Like, we have enough, we can provide floaties to everyone. No one needs to swim. And you can get where you need to go on a floaty. You don't need to swim. We can float. And I think that's what they would, but I hear what you're saying. There is an advantage. You know, there's probably a way to swim without a floaty that might allow you to swim faster or go places
you don't. I don't even think it's about swimming faster. It's about because you don't have a floaty, you're going to find yourself to land or you're not. You're going to die. You know what I mean? Kind of one of those things.
Well, you're saying there's no benefit to swimming over a floaty. That's basically what you're saying.
No, I was saying it was assistance to not learning how to swim.
Yeah, but what's the benefit to learning how to swim?
To get to land.
But you can get to land with a floaty.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it was a bad,
That's what I'm saying. There needs to be a benefit. Like, otherwise, you're just kind of making the communist argument for them where they're like,
yeah,
well, why don't we just give everyone a floating?
And that's kind of where we're at in this day and age. I mean, we're going to talk about it more. There's other stuff that's going on and later in the show, but it does feel like we're at this kind of like nexus where everything's starting to feel a little bit communistic. Is that a bad thing to say?
I mean, it's not bad if it's true. I don't know if it's true though. It's like kind of easy to say.
It feels a little bit. Feeling a little bit.
Feels like people are very, very kind of afraid, and they're kind of assuming a lot of things are going to happen that haven't happened yet, but are just kind of predicting them, and then they are. And when they're in that mentality, they start reaching for these very large ideologies or philosophies or ways of doing things and kind of attempt to push them. So like UBI stuff, like that's like kind of a big thing talked about right now in the context of AI. I don't see how that's any more relevant today than it would have been before, unless the doomers are right. But I mean, even the
AI stuff is subsidized to a certain point, right? Like, it's it even intersects us with technology too. I mean, it's not just like Pokemon.
I haven't looked at the financials of all the AI stuff yet, and I don't know how much they are subsidized. But as far as I can tell, their revenues and profits are growing very fast, and I'd guess it won't be long before they aren't subsidized at all.
Well, it's a great post. Got me thinking, Simple Snacker. The top comment was from Dan. He said, he quoted something here, and he says, very, very much so. I'm toying with an idea to explain this insanity. I think it's Wittgenstein's What Would It Look Like If the Earth Went Around the Sun? And he said, extreme lack of empathy, the steep meaning of seeing the world through someone else's eyes, which is ironic because it's the very left-wingy, weak-minded people who scream about this quality most.
Yeah, that is super frustrating that while empathy is like a core kind of virtue that certain people with certain political beliefs hold that as like the primary virtue, they do not empathize uniformly. They empathize with, like, you know, more or less peers, and then maybe people down like below them in some kind of hierarchy. But yet, anyone above them does not get that treatment, and the capitalists are the people they kind of label as above them.
Just charity is a virtue, not empathy. But I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, empathy should. If empathy is a virtue, you should apply it uniformly as well. Mostly what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. I've come to realize, I talk about this later, we'll talk about it later, but it's I'm really noticing now it's hard for people when they're in, it almost feels like there's more, or maybe it's just me looking at it more and seeing it more than I ever have. I just see a lot of people lacking a moral interior life, especially at the top, as far as like leadership and stuff, and it's, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think why would you argue someone should have a rich moral inner life?
So they can lead properly.
What if they don't want to lead?
Lead properly, I said.
What if they want to follow?
No, I was talking about the leadership. The leadership we have at the top.
Oh, and governments and
everything, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a good one. Let's jump into the number two top story this week. This is called Wittgenstein, Economics, Empathy, and an Unpublished Tale of a Fishing Boat. This is from Dan. 8 comments, 10,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, this was in reaction to Simple Sacrifice post that we just went over and Carr, you shared Den's comment, which he reshares here, and expands upon with, I guess, an unpublished piece of writing that he had chambered that I think some editor did not want to release. And so he shares that here. Yeah, and tries to, in another, goes through a similar exercise, a simple stacker, making a similar point that we don't have to view capital and labor as being antagonistic, because that's kind of the typical communist or socialist framing, is that capital exists at the expense of labor, and capital views labor as being sort of antagonistic towards it, and that with like less labor, capital would be better off. And then with using the example of a fishing vessel and how that, which is like a, you know, kind of one of the oldest kind of ventures, risky ventures, uses that to explain how they are actually complementary, or they both assist each other in getting a better outcome for both the laborers and the capital providers. And that's kind of the gist here, because you can view the capital as the boat, perhaps, like someone has to invest in pay someone to give them a boat or lease them a boat, and so they're risking that money on the hopes that the laborers that they staff the boat with will be able to go to sea and get fish that is at a quantity and value that is higher enough than the labor in the boat itself, bring it back to shore, and that they will be able to resell it such that the capital, there's a profit on top of the capital, and then the fishermen themselves can be compensated. And it's all complementary, it's all done in tandem. They are incentive aligned. Without one, you can't have the other. And, you know, a fisherman without a boat is, you know, does not have a wage, and a boat without fishermen cannot catch fish and make profits. That's kind of the whole thing here. He shares quite a few more weighty things that are hidden by a little bit of economic jargon, but it's a nice entry point into those, or a nice dressing around those ideas. If you want to go deeper, he has a bunch of links to some of these other things.
So I guess he's basically kind of read through what you're talking, but it almost sounds like he's observing the fact that you can have a fishing boat in town that obviously requires capital, humans to do it, and then that somehow affects people down the street who are working at a bar or anything like that. Is that basically the gist?
No, it's not so much that they're affecting the people that are working at the bar, although it is, especially if they're in some way consuming the fish, or they are compensated by the fishermen when the fishermen go to the bar, or it's all quite intertwined. That's how humans do things. I think the greater point that he's trying to make is that when people like the author of the post that Simple Stacker was discussing describe capitalism, they are kind of forgetting the capitalist, the capital holder, the person that provides the boat, and how essential they are to the equation, and how it, because most of the fishermen's or the laborer's relationship with capital is so indirect. They have no experience, they have no empathy for what is risked by the person with the capital and who is engaging in an entrepreneurial endeavor, because they just see a salary that is kind of divorced from the consequences and losses that the capital is absorbing for them. They get all upset about the capitalist absorbing excess benefit, but they almost have no feelings about the capitalists absorbing
risk.
The excess losses should the fishing vessel fail. And so that's just kind of the point he's trying to help us make in our own heads. I didn't watch the clip. I'm not sure. It's from The Big Short.
Oh, okay.
But the top comment we had from Simple Snacker said, "Haha, I'm not entirely a boat," is the best analogy. We're all brought up on pirate stories where the captain doesn't share the spoils fairly and the crew mutinies. That being said, it's a really great point about how, or I'm sorry, why workers would feel solidarity with each other from vastly different industries, and in practice, when their interests collide, they get nasty. One way to look at it, and the way I look at most things, is that people rationalize post hoc. What does post hoc mean? Thus, some workers realize, consciously or subconsciously, that the quickest way for them to increase their allocation of resources is to bargain for it via political activism and strikes. Institutional rules allow for this, so they take advantage of it. They do this out of self-interest, not any high-minded solidarity about workers uniting, but they ex post rationalize it with higher-minded principles. Since the higher principles are common across workers of various industries, they make a show of unity, but like I said, when their interests collide, the unity evaporates. Cool stuff. There you go. You got anything else on this one, Keon?
I'm good.
Okay. We'll jump into the next number one story this week is quantum threat, question mark. This is from Clarity, 38 comments, 12,100K sats. What's going on now with quantum?
Yeah, Clarity has been on this one. They keep like resharing it over and over again, and they were really zapping the crap out of the comments because they kind of wanted to spread this around as much as possible. They mostly shared this to say that they think the quantum stuff is a lot of FUD, and they think that FUD is very numerous right now because of the state of the world and kind of what's going on. And they think that so people are a little more vulnerable to FUD, and they are also more inclined to share FUD given their like kind of weakened, like more panicky sort of mental state that they find themselves in. And then they make the argument, or they remind us that Bitcoin is like pay to pub key hash, basically that you don't know the pub key, is actually quite safe from most quantum attacks. Because a lot of the algorithms that are presumed to be, or the quantum algorithms that will be used to attack Bitcoin or take Bitcoin, they depend on knowing the pub key. And so if you've never revealed the pub key of the Bitcoin that you hold, because it's just hashed on chain, it's in an output that's hashed on chain, you're safe from those attacks. And that's kind of, so he's like, you know, a lot of people don't have to worry about it because they've never really spent and revealed their pub key. And that's like the gist is like that. Some people, quite a few people wouldn't have to worry about quantum, and FUD is like bad, and FUD, and we're more FUDdy than ever. And that's kind of all he was saying. He feels like quantum is especially FUDdy because it's one of those things we do it with AI too, where it's like, it's so big, it's so powerful, it's everything. It's going to destroy everything, it's going to change everything. Everything changes, and you just it's like a lot to contend with. You can't defend yourself against this. When someone says a force is extremely powerful and like infinite, how are you supposed to defend anything? Nothing can be defended against it. And people make similar claims about quantum that it destroys all encryption more or less.
Yeah. So I think I see like a lot of different threads to this. So I'll start at the top first. So like I think what's interesting about the quantum thing, in a lot of ways, it's there's the FUD around whether quantum's going to break Bitcoin. That's one piece of the FUD. The FUD of quantum as an actual real technology that can be leveraged right now. That's the second piece of FUD. And then the third FUD is that whether Bitcoiners are actually doing anything about quantum, right? And so there's like three pieces of FUD, and that's what's so interesting about this whole quantum threat thing is just like
there's always somebody battling one of those three different FUDs, at least the way I see it. And then existentially, you have, because kind of to going what we were talking about before with Den's piece, is you have capital being allocated towards those three problems directly. And then you have to wonder as a person, like, okay, there's capital being allocated. There's these three different pieces of FUD. Now, what do I do as a person who has, some Bitcoin? Like, do you ignore this? Do you point and look? Like, what are you supposed to do, right? Just like the average person looking at this. And I think the other really interesting thing is that, for the longest time, like, AI was just, like, stuff that people would allocate towards, capital. And they would say, AI is coming, AI is coming. I'm not to say that AI is here or anything like that. I think it's definitely helped us work a lot better, and it's definitely feeling like it's hard to distinguish what's real and what isn't. With all that being said, I do think there is something to be said about, like, when money starts getting allocated in these areas and it's happening and there's people building around it on the Bitcoiner side and, like, on these other sides, like, I think it's probably worth taking it seriously, in my opinion, because there's a lot of risk being allocated towards that.
Definitely the rich people care about this kind of stuff a lot, especially the non-technical rich people. They who are, like, kind of out of their depth and kind of can't sense, kind of blind, and kind of can't sense what's inside the black box of cryptography. And all they hear is, like, quantum's going to get inside the black box. And they never really understood the black box to begin with. And so they're like, oh, no, my favorite black box is threatened. And it's much more nuanced. I think there's reason to be, there are these social reasons to be, and these, like, financial reasons to be concerned about these non-tactical people freaking out about this thing in a non-specific way. Like you shared a tweet from Chamath and Saylor here, or Chamath responding to Saylor. And, Chamath, known for only for great, reasonable takes, completely uncorrupted character. But he does represent, I think, the the sweater vest take of Bitcoin, which and the sweater vest understanding of Bitcoin, which is, not really understanding it at all. Here's quantum, is mostly familiar with lots of buzzwords and kind of collecting them into coherent thoughts, and telling his minions to allocate money to them. And that's kind of what he does in response to this tweet here, where he's basically like, Bitcoin needs to become quantum resistant. Otherwise, it's not going to become what you think Bitcoin is, Michael Saylor, is what he says.
I think they're both coming at it from their own, obviously from their own past experiences with this. Saylor and Chamath, obviously there's that to be said, but I do think it's interesting, and this is just me as somebody who's just, like, reading this. So Michael Saylor says, if AI compresses terminal value and makes every moat temporary, capital will rotate to assets with no disruption risks. Bitcoin is digital capital, scarce, neutral, and impervious to AI disruption. Bitcoin should be the primary beneficiary of the shift. And then Chamath says, Bitcoin would need to be quantum resistant by then. And then Saylor comes back with the same thing that most Bitcoiners say. Well, your AI thesis assumes the digital world is quantum resistant. If quantum breaks cryptography, it breaks AI, cloud infrastructure, banks, and the internet, not just Bitcoin. The entire stack upgrades together. And then Chamath says, no, a store of value has to be 100% hacking resistant. It's an existential feature for other industries. It will be important, but less binary existential. I do think it's interesting that he's basically putting Bitcoin as its own separate thing away from the rest of the world because it's money. That's my read on this. He says a store of value. So he's saying that a store of value has to be 100% hacking resistant. And if you do this in gold, would you say gold is hacking resistant as a store value?
No, I think he's applying a double standard, and he kind of lays out the double standard pretty. He says this one category of things, the things that he thinks are okay in a quantum world, the things that he's invested towards are quantum resistant, or are hacking resistant, or they're, if they are hacked, it's not a big deal. But then he applies different reasoning to Bitcoin because he says it's a store of value. But if his money isn't in Bitcoin, which I think it isn't, because he's
no, I think it is. I saw another tweet where he's like he's
gone back up.
No, he basically says he was like early on Bitcoin, early on Tesla. He just started listing out all the stuff that he's been right about. I think he is holding Bitcoin. Obviously, he's probably not holding a lot of Bitcoin compared to Saylor, but I still think that's an interesting take, because I've yet to see somebody say that no, a store value needs to be 100% hacking resistant. And obviously, Saylor didn't reply back because he probably didn't have a rebuttal. But
I don't know how you argue with that. I just don't think anything is 100% hacking resistant. I think that's kind of so you have to kind of make that argument, which is just really hard to make. You have to get Chamath to accept the reality of the situation, which is like nothing is 100% hacking resistant. I think the other part of this is that Bitcoin is like an idea. It's like people trying to create money outside of anyone's direct control, anyone's control. And that is what is hacking. That is like the hacking resistance that I am concerned about. Is can we keep that idea? Can we hold that idea forward? It doesn't. And I want Bitcoin to be quantum resistant if quantum is a threat. Obviously, I think many Bitcoiners do. But I'm mostly concerned about that idea not losing, that being resistant to FUD, being resistant or not being resistant to FUD, not being able to defend itself from social attacks and corrosion of that idea that we should be able to have this thing, we should all be working towards having the ability to save money independent of the permission of other people or small groups of people. I think it's resistant. Yeah. That idea is resistant to quantum, and so I'm not concerned about quantum at that level.
Yeah. I just think it's an interesting argument to be on the other side of, as far as like, this is what he feels like, Chamath feels like, that's the thing that's...
I don't hear, funny thing is, I don't hear this argument being made by any cryptographers, so...
That's true. I mean, but I think it's worth bringing up, because we were talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is, I think the reason why the cryptographers aren't bringing it up is because they're already thinking about it, and they understand all the details of it, and they're already prepared. They already can see upgrade paths.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned that earlier. There's like these three different FUDs that are coming out at the same time when it comes to quantum, and I don't necessarily know. Either way, stuff is getting done. Stuff is getting shipped, and sometimes you just gotta be patient. All right, that's all the top stories that we have this week. We're going to jump into... Oh, here, I lost my thing. We're going to jump into Wumble's picks. We're going to jump into Wumble and keep it light and friendly. So Wumble wanted to get something really easy this week. He wanted us to talk about Afro Man. Just proved who free speech actually protects. So the police raided Afro Man's house with guns drawn, found nothing. He turned the footage into music videos mocking them. The officers sued him. A jury sided with Afro Man.
This is a slop summary by Yerman of this Billboard article about Afro Man. I guess he got his home raided, like door kicked in and stuff. I think he either used body cam footage or home footage to create... media, I guess
it worked. We're talking about it
around it, and promote that media, but just kind of like making fun of the officers maybe they had a warrant, but anyway, they invaded his home for spurious reasons that ended up not being valid, and he mocked them, and then the strange thing is the officers tried to sue them. the officers, yeah, the officers tried to sue Afro Man, and Afro Man's like, this is my First Amendment speech right, and the court, the jury and the court sided with Afro Man, being like, yeah, what do you think? You think he doesn't get to talk about or, you know, escalate his commentary, promote his commentary in a silly way, using music, using his art form, so he won.
So his question was, my comment in the post has a link to an old post with the original video that spawned the lawsuit.
Okay.
So let's see. What's his question, though? No. I think it's this one. Oh, it's unavailable. Sorry, it's unavailable. Anyway.
I haven't seen the video.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. But, only in America.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Where was this at?
This was like, in the UK.
Oh, is it the UK? Oh,
I know. If it was in the UK, this would go differently. But in America. Oh, wait,
is this in the UK or America?
This is in America.
Oh, okay. Only in America. Okay, let's jump into some serious stuff. So Pokemon Go users train the next generation of killer robots. So this was from The Rage, from 0x Bitcoiner, 4com, 077 Stats. So over the weekend, Niantic? I think it's Niantic. Have basically given up all the massive image database that they have to... Hang on, let me see. Thousands of users are rightfully outraged about unwittingly having to help train what appear to be AI models as big tech promotes attempt to downplay the implications. They basically... Where is that? Yeah, they basically... The Niantic has a history of developing technology for the U.S. military intelligence complex, and they basically handed that over. Let me click on this one, because The Rage goes on a rage about this. Yeah, thousands of Pokemon Go users feel tricked into building the Niantic's massive image database. Big tech attempts to crisis manage the software as a tool for logistics that it turns out not to be true. Yeah, it's basically just talking about like this simple game that people love to play, Pokemon Go, turns out not to be a just a simple Pikachu kind of game, Keon.
Yeah, I mean, it might have started out that way. I don't know the origin. I haven't read super deeply into this. It just, you know, not surprising though that someone who is accumulating tons of user-generated data and sending all their camera footage while the app is open and they're playing this game, they're sending it to some database somewhere. They are now using it. They are repurposing that byproduct. They are refining it into training data they're refining it into an LLM, basically, or something like it that can be used for purposes that suit whoever pays for such things.
Yeah, so apparently it was founded by John Hankey, according to what The Rage posted here, co-founder of Google Earth and former product lead of Google's Geo division. And they faced their largest data privacy scandal in history for the WeSpy scandal, where, I don't know if you remember, this was like 2010, I think, where they were grabbing people's Wi-Fi, unencrypted Wi-Fi networks. They passed all the streetcar views, all the street view cars back in the day. I remember that. But, yeah. Turns out, shouldn't be playing Pokemon Go. Did you ever play Pokemon Go?
No. I know a lot of people who did. I remember it was, like,
I
really
did when
crazy.
It first came out, and then I uninstalled and stopped playing it, but...
I've never been into Pokemon, so... Yeah. I missed it. They could have seen the inside of my dwellings.
Yeah, this would have been, like, 2012, 2014 or something. So yeah, that happened. The other one that was that happened this week in AI was the Visa CLI command line commerce, is what they're calling it, Keon. Did you get a chance to see this?
I looked at it, but this is kind of what it's not like Visa is just gonna like lay down and let other technologies and competitors become internet, become agent native and not do it themselves. You know, every AI bro is installing this thing to do machine-to-machine payments now. I don't,
Well, I guess I'm just more curious, like how are they saving that? I guess, is it more like a login? Are they treating it just like you log in with your PayPal and then, like, is that what they're doing? Are you logging with your Braintree account? Like, how are they? I guess I want to know how are they leveraging this tool.
Oh, how are the AI bros, or how is Visa?
How is Visa leveraging this tool? Like, is it? Yeah.
It's you know, it's what you do when you go to Anna's Market right here in the near the lab where you. But it's now happening behind this command line interface. There's no human touching it to the terminal. There's no other human on the other side telling them how much to pay. It's all programmatic, but it's using the same Visa network, the same account balance network, the same, yeah. All the same mechanisms, but it's just happening more automatically now and via the command line.
Yeah, the other thing I saw this week was that DoorDash is they created something new called Dashers or something, where you can kind of order Dashers to do random things and then pay them via like a machine readable.
You can work for the bots.
You work for the bots, basically. Man, this turned dark real fast with the AI agent stuff, huh?
No, I don't think. I mean, this is like a temporary thing. I think until we get.
I mean, you called this. You were saying like, oh, like. I remember you were saying this like a week ago or 2 weeks ago, where you were saying like, oh, we don't even, like, Bitcoin and Lightning doesn't even have, I forget, I won't put words in your mouth, but you said something like that.
No, I was like, yeah, I don't understand why people are like, this is bullish for Bitcoin because the agents, they don't have KYC. And I'm like, are you guys, like, these agents aren't autonomous. They're run by humans who value fiat and use fiat. Why would they want their agent to be a sovereign individual when they don't care about being one themselves? It doesn't make any sense to me. And so I was saying, I think I said stable coins and fiat and credit cards. I didn't anticipate that Visa would come out with a command line interface.
You did it?
I thought someone else might make it, or they'll figure, you know,
I thought Square was gonna open get claw first, like to be honest.
Square, Stripe, I don't, you know, Stripe has their stable coin thing.
I mean, it's probably why, like, Dorsey's gonna do stable coins now.
Bitcoin solves a certain problem, and do bots value the problem that Bitcoin solves or not? And I don't think they do.
Bearish.
Yeah, and so I just don't. People do this thing where they're like, the world is changing, but it's changing in a way that I benefit, and it confirms everything
so
I believe.
Bearish.
I just
give
think
me
it's
a, give me a bullish take then.
On what?
On something. You're just saying, like, Visa's going to rule the world, stablecoins are going to take over everything, and...
I mostly just mean that AI does not change anything with regard to, like, the world's relationship with Bitcoin. That's mostly all... That's not... I don't think that's bearish. I'm just saying that you were wrong. Or people who thought that were wrong.
Wrong. I don't think I'm wrong. I think it's still going to go the other way. I'm not going to stop. But I'm not going to say I'm wrong yet. I believe Lightning I just saw an Alpi demo last week where they did it at the rodeo. Like,
oh, it works.
It
works. Doesn't matter though.
It's
cause,
great
because it has worked. Bitcoin has worked for nearly 2 decades now, and it doesn't matter though. It doesn't matter if it works. It matters if people value it. It's not about whether it work, whether it can do the things that it claims it does. It's the people value. To value it, its distinction from all the other solutions that exist to a similar set of problems, and people do not value.
I think people do value it.
Bitcoin for payments.
It's just not a lot of people value it, and I do think we will get there. It'll take some time, but this is where we have to go to first, I guess.
People have
to learn.
The only point I'm making is that when we get there, I think we'll get there because I am bullish on Bitcoin. It will not be. It will be independent of. The AI boom. There is not Bitcoin sales are not inflated or catching the wind of this AI boom is the main point that I try to make when I say this stuff. I don't see it happening. The wind is not blowing into Bitcoin.
I just think the obvious thing to this is like they cancel your account or they reverse a transaction or they pull, like, this feels very centralized. And I just think that's gonna happen.
Of course it will. It's but it happens today
really,
with humans.
Really, really bad.
And they don't get their card denied or a transaction reversed, and they say, you know what I need? I need Bitcoin. That's not what happens, and a bot won't say that either. And so that's the point. I'm trying to make. You guys are all
Pharisee.
Like, this is changing everything. Everything I've been saying and experiencing for the last decade in Bitcoin, it is completely bots. Bots will think way differently, bro, and everything will come exactly my way, and it'll come. Dude,
you're on one
number
today.
Number go up, bro.
You're on one today.
I just think it's like Moon Boys.
Are you gonna insert Visa into your Snacker News as an option?
No. I'm not saying that it changes my behavior. I'm just saying I'm just rejecting everyone else's, you know, fantasy that it changes other people's behavior.
I think it does. I think it does over time. I think people have to get punched in the face a few times. By the Visa overlords,
they already have been, and they just kind of keep
taking. I don't think we have yet.
Well, why do bots make that worse? Why?
I think it's because people will eventually. I think people will eventually realize that there's just more passive ways of making money with Bitcoin than with something like Visa that's going to require you to jump through hurdles and stuff like that. And I think most people that transact outside the United States won't have the luxury of having a PayPal or something like that. It just opens rails. It opens lanes that Visa can't touch. But
okay, no. So I like this. This is the argument you're making: is that there will be more transactions than there have ever been before as a result of bots existing. There will be more agents, human or machine. Wanting to transact and transact a lot.
Yeah, and I think,
and therefore more Bitcoin, people get punched Bitcoin in the
will,
face.
Bitcoin will grab a small piece of that in the beginning, and then over time, I really want to believe that it'll turn.
I agree. Over time, I just don't think it.
Yeah.
My main point is that it's not. The bots are going to do what the humans do. That's what they do. They're parrots.
Look, you can already do image generation and music generation and proprietary data sense. Oh, man.
Oh, they have the whole stack, dude.
Cool stuff. That's all the AI stuff that we have going on. We're going to jump into... Keon doesn't have any picks this week, but I do. Let's jump into the SEC. So we got some more SEC stuff. So basically, the SEC finally clarified the application of federal security laws to crypto assets. What does that mean? Well, there's a lot. I didn't like this one because it's just too long to read. I love this one by Grayscale. Really explains it really simply to people like me. So basically, the SEC categorized crypto assets into five distinct groups. They did say stable coins can still be securities. But yeah. What was surprising is they basically said all these are commodities right here, which are the Bitcoin Cash, the Bitcoin, the Aptos, who I've never heard of, Avalanche, Cardano, Chainlink, Dogecoin, Ether, Hedera, Litecoin, Polkadot, Shibu Inu, Solano, Stellar, Tezos, and XRP. It's wild to see that. They extended this logic to other examples like Binance Chain, Athena, and all these other crypto stuff. The biggest thing I thought was more interesting than most of this stuff was down here. So basically all the ones that I named are all just digital commodities. This is according to the SEC's classification. Digital collectibles like NFTs and stuff like that are not securities, surprisingly. Even digital tools and meme coins are not. Same thing that goes with anything that's a badge or a ticket or a credential. It's not a security. Stable coins are sometimes securities, but I would imagine if you don't have some sort of banking license. And then the stuff that actually is digital security is the same thing that we've known since 2018, 2017 is the ICO stuff, which is like initial coin offerings for a company or anything like that. That's always going to be a security. So I thought this was big news. I don't see a lot of people covering it, but I thought we should cover it because it's definitely important.
Well, it was. I think it was because it was. It's sort of like reverting to what like pre-Biden era understanding of all this stuff was. It's
exactly. It just wasn't classified. This was always my understanding. I just, dude, the only thing that shocked me on all this was like, how the hell is Cardano? No one even uses that thing. And like some of these other stuff, like, but that just shows you, man, some of the wedge these companies like Coinbase have been able to push through Congress, getting their token on there. So
yeah,
it's wild to see.
Their definition of a digital commodity is a little bit looser, I think, than or their like conditions. Their conditions are kind of vague. So it's like, what makes it a security is that investors in the token or underlying asset do it are profit seeking and sort of investing in the management of the crypto system of like a certain group of individuals are selling them their management of this crypto system, and that's what makes it a security. And so these things that are digital commodities do not have this like sort of centralized management is what they're saying. And so it's hard for me too to understand why they think that some of these other crypto systems that clearly have centralized management are not securities too. Like I can make that argument about Bitcoin. There might be other things I can make that argument about where there's no centralized management, but these other systems.
So my understanding of this before this classification was that anything that was determined a digital commodity was something that had network effects to it, like actual stuff being built on its asset. That's why I always thought like, oh, Ethereum is definitely going to be one and Bitcoin's going to be one. But all these other ones, I was just kind of shocked. I was like, really? Like, can you argue that? But like you said, they took it to the extreme. Like, so in 2017, 2018, when I was becoming aware of all this stuff, like, this has far exceeded that. So basically, all of Trump's meme coins, all that kind of stuff, safe and not a security. The only thing that they actually kept here was that just the ICO stuff. You can even make a token that is attached to some sort of like tooling, right? And you could even make a GitHub token or something, like a GitLab token or something, and that's fine. It's not considered a security, which is also surprising.
I think so. In general, that might be. I think that's as long as we have a nice definition to work with. And Bitcoin's on the right side of it. I'm happy.
I still think this opens up everybody to a lot of scams.
Yes.
Ton of scams. I think you'll see even more scams now just because all this other stuff has been clear. But this is what they regulated.
Yeah,
or classified.
These security laws exist to protect investors from scams, from getting attracted to things that are securities, things that are relying on people delivering on certain things where the consumer doesn't necessarily have the ability to judge the management. So these laws were proposed to protect people from scams, and sort of they're like saying,
I actually think this is going to lead to, I'm not going to say any names. But I do think we're going to see more of stuff that we would have not seen as tokens in Bitcoin as tokens now, attached to a certain value peg. And I think we're going to see even more of that. Still not securities, but I think we'll start seeing more things that we would have never thought as Bitcoiners would turn into a token to all of a sudden now becoming a token with its own... unit cost basis.
This is also, I would agree that this usually what happens following these regulatory clarities or changes is that there's like a glut of people that appear to take advantage of them. And so I guess that'll happen too. This is also one of the things I felt like we least needed as far as clarification. And I feel like what we need is actually AML and money transmission stuff. All of that stuff relaxed on these assets, not necessarily whether you're able to scam people or
good
not.
Good point. Yeah.
So that's kind of what I would. That's what I would like to see.
Much rather seen than this. Like, I felt, yeah, you're right.
100%. That would actually unlock the industry. This is just helping, you know, Trump, like, you know, like people who want to perpetuate these scams and hold these scams and make money from them. That's helping them. Great. I want it. But what about all of us plebs who just want to be able to have an easy to use wallet and not
be tracked by your government?
Yeah, not be tracked by the government. Exchange Bitcoin for a little bit of my fiat paycheck. And yeah, not have to dox myself.
But you could just go ahead and make a tool that like scams people and use that instead. Cool. That's better, isn't it?
Yeah, it's almost like this is basically suggesting that what you should do instead of creating a service that is honest about what's going on, which is like I run a custodial wallet that now I need to do all this AML and KYC and stuff. But instead, if what I want to do is make a chain where I'm the only miner, more or less, I have a stake of 100%.
And it's considered
I sell them a utility token for using that
chain. Utility token, there you go.
And they can transfer that around, and I'm not a money transmitter because I'm just a crypto service provider.
A utility token.
And that's not a security that I gave them. It's a digital commodity.
It's kind of ass backwards.
Yeah, maybe this is good for eCash. Maybe that means that eCash is not dealing in maybe that token that they're using.
Yeah, you don't need it backing anymore.
I don't know exactly.
Well, you can't call it a stable coin, but you definitely don't need it backing anymore. You just call it a utility token.
Maybe the eCash tokens themselves are not securities now.
Well, no, they're definitely not securities.
They're not securities.
They're closer to stable coins, but you would even say that doesn't that you could just say it's a utility token, just like you would even probably call what's the one from Ethereum that they have? The DAI, you could just say it's something like that.
I guess, yeah. It doesn't change the nature.
It just holds a peg.
It doesn't change the nature, I guess, of money transmission. So I don't know because these mints
somebody
are,
will do it just to push.
Mints are quite centralized.
We'll test it. I was actually thinking you'll probably start seeing other tokens out on these other L2s that haven't had a token yet. That's what I was thinking.
Like which L2s?
I don't want to. There's no names. We'll save that for another day. I'm sure Stackers will post about this. And this is where my mind went to naturally, because you know I'm always thinking like, oh, how would this play out? So my mind went to all these things naturally. I'm glad that you were also thinking. I didn't think about the thing that you said about like, I wish you would have had clarity on this other area. Like, yeah, absolutely, 100%. I didn't even think about that until you brought that up right now. But yeah, that's a whole piece on its own. But yeah, I think this was going to lead to more. To scams. More scams, 100%. And there's nothing you can do about it because it's legal now. So my advice is just buy Bitcoin.
We could still educate people.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so if you see something saying utility token or not quite a stable coin, more like utility, we want you to buy it, use it.
Shout them down as a shitcoiner.
I'm just saying be careful. If it quacks like a duck, sounds like a duck, and speaks like a duck, it's probably a scam. Cool. So I wanted to cover that. The other thing is, so Peter Thiel's back at it again. He's calling for fears that the Antichrist is coming. This time he's in Rome. So this one actually gets really interesting. I don't think you've read any of this yet, but. So Peter Thiel, doing the same thing that he did last year in San Francisco, is now in Rome. Talking about his kind of premonitions or his ideas around when this Antichrist is coming and what it looks like, and it's all super weird, man. It's very weird. But he arrived in Rome, delivered four lectures on the Antichrist. The series, which began on Sunday, is exploring how occult forces are ceaselessly at work, intent on destroying what remains of the West, according to the conservative Christian group hosting him. So this particular group also released a statement. They are the people that kind of made all this happen for them. And then they talk about, like, this is their official press release. So they had to release a press release because this got so much attention. So they released a press release on the fact that Peter Thiel is being hosted at this place, which is their association that helped them do the proposal and the organization. And they talked through about why they're doing it, and they talked about the ideologies around Europe coinciding with the end of ideas there, and they don't want that to happen, and that's why they're helping Thiel with this. And I think for me, and we talked about this last time when this was a big thing. So I think for me, there's a lot of things here, but I think there's a lot of tells. So let me start with the how I feel about this. So this particular article was created by an actual priest. So he wrote this article about Peter Thiel. This is, if there's anything worth reading, it's this. This actually talks about the sovereign individual. This talks about cryptocurrencies. This talks about the PayPal mafia. This talks about a lot of things. I didn't get a chance to really read through it, Keon, but I plan on reading through this just because it's so rich in all these different things as technologists like ourselves and people that are into Bitcoin. Like, it touches on a lot of things we should probably read. I'm not saying a lot of this I agree with. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying there's a lot here worth looking into of how the other side feels about people like Thiel and even probably people like us, which is interesting. I think it's just interesting to read thoughts on this. And this is coming from somebody who's a priest. So, yeah, he goes into it all. I'm not going to paraphrase it. I'll let you guys read this. I think for me personally, I've come to realize this, and I post this to be really clear, that Thiel obviously is fixated on this kind of stuff. He feels like there's like this imminent catastrophe that's happening. It gets me thinking that a lot of people are probably like, you know, coaxing him or pushing him to keep trying to decode this moment that he's feeling inside of it. I think the vast majority of people that are spiritual, when they see something like this, you know, it's to become holy inside of that kind of like that terror. It's not to like run away from the terror. It's not even to run towards it. It's to become holy inside of it. And I think the other thing that he fails to mention is when he talks through this whole Antichrist series is that the second coming is coming, and that's Jesus Christ, right? And everybody knows that who understands Revelation, understands Scripture. So it kind of feels a little bit detached a little bit of why he's focused just sort of on this exact thing. And this is kind of what we were talking about earlier, is just like, it's very simple. It's not very hard to live a moral life, go to church, pray, find spirituality for yourself. And I think he's forgetting the fact that in this day and age, especially with the looming that he's talking about, we are extremely blessed to be able to do that right now. The fact that I can go down the street, go to church, and nothing can stop me doing that, that's a blessing that I don't think most people realize just how awesome that is, to feel completely safe in Jesus Christ and feel completely safe in knowing that everything is going to be good, irregardless of what people are portraying or seeing out there. And I just want to share that because I don't think there's enough people. Obviously, there's not enough people in technology talking about it. There's even much less people in Bitcoin talking about it. So I wanted to make sure that I speak up about it because this is just more me kind of thinking through how this playing out. It kind of does feel a little bit that he's trying to start his own denomination. I don't know why. I just get the sense that this is where that's headed. And that's even more of a scarier kind of thing. But I would not be surprised if we get like a sect of Christianity that appeases people like Peter Thiel and the people that are around him. So, anyways.
Yeah, I don't have much to say on this. I did, I'm familiar with a lot of Peter Thiel stuff, but I'm not super familiar with this like last stuff, this like last few years of the Antichrist stuff that he's been doing. My read on him is he's not overtly pursuing some of the things that I think people are kind of, or, you know, I don't think he's pursuing another denomination, I would guess. I would guess if anything is happening that is kind of like that, it's a little more like a subconscious thing. I think that he feels like he might actually have some role in preventing the emergence of these things he perceives as very harmful and potentially representing the Antichrist. And that might, you know, that might be a mistake, and maybe he should be stopped or prevented from doing that, or at least people should be warned about him being wrong. But my guess is I personally don't think he has
he has ill intent. I think he might the result might be a lot like someone having ill intent. But I don't know. I don't. From what I understand of Thiel, having spent quite a bit of time, at least paying attention to his startup advice type stuff and how he thinks about the world in general around that stuff, I don't get the sense that he's a person who wants to do evil. Even if maybe he has done evil, results of his.
So I think that's why it's probably worth reading this, just because he goes into kind of like. You know, because who is that guy that he talks about a lot? It's, Rene Girard. Yeah, so he talks about him a lot. He talks about that he comes from the school of that. So it's interesting to see that dissected in this piece, the one that he wrote here, Paolo Bonatti.
Girard is a Christian theologian.
The other thing worth mentioning is the... is they talk about mimetic desire and about that sort of thing, about being influential it's just interesting because a lot of this kind of talk is very structured in the, like, I don't know, it just feels very structured in like the wrong thing. You know, it's not talking about Jesus Christ's second coming. It's more focused on the thing that happens right before that. And a lot of people have done that throughout the years, and it's just weird. And then the other strange thing, the other yellow flag, is just that he's literally in Rome. Like, out of all the places in Europe he could have chosen. So he's clearly doing this to get some attention of a sort.
Imagine he believes that there is an existential threat facing the world, and he believes that it has been this might be the prophecy of the Antichrist, and he wants this existential threat to the world to be stopped. Why wouldn't he go to Rome to try to convince people who are at the highest levels of some of the biggest churches in the world that they should be taking this as seriously as he is and hear him out? Like, his behavior is indistinguishable from what I can tell, from someone who actually believes what he's saying. I would hope someone who actually believed this and actually did sense that there was an existential threat, and maybe perhaps even knew that one was going to happen, they would go and talk to these people who are communicating with, you know, a billion people on the earth about these things. So weird. It's different. I mean, it's abnormal. No one, I don't know anyone else going to Rome to talk about how they see the future.
I think the focus on that is kind of interesting. It's like there's been hundreds of people throughout time that have said, you know, the Antichrist is coming. That's like the likelihood of him actually believing it. I agree with you. I think he actually does believe in it. But if you look through history, the people that have done the similar things, they all fall into this one kind of classification of a human. And I'm just saying, like, it's feeling a little bit cartoony, a little bit. And
like, you can predict kind of. Moves.
And it's not good to say that about somebody's life or somebody's what he's doing, because he seems passionate about it, and I believe he is. But I think it's one thing to not listen to the other side when they're trying to tell you that, like, hey, like, all the answers that you're out there, or all the things that you're out there saying, aren't entirely accurate. Maybe you should go seek some actual theologians. That's what I would say. I was just like, I think there's. It's kind of like, you know, it's the same thing in Bitcoin, like, where you have people that are like Bitcoiners, or maybe they're like tangential to Bitcoin, but they don't know the inner workings of like Bitcoin Core or something like that, and they feel like they can start throwing sticks and stones at the thing and without knowing any clue of like what's going on. And this is just for me to tie it back to Bitcoin, but I do get the sense that instead of just going to them and asking questions, like most people will do. I don't know if you saw the John Attack video this week with Bob Burnett, but from what Bob was saying, like he went over there and actually had a conversation with Core and like some of the people that run that decentralized thing, and instead of just like throwing stones and sticks and stuff like that. And this kind of feels like, this is what I'm saying, is Teal kind of feels like that. It feels like more like sticks and stones being thrown, screaming about the end of the world, as opposed to just like meeting people and talking to them first.
Do we know that he didn't do that first?
He's never mentioned it. I haven't been to one of his lectures yet. But I would strongly urge, if somebody's listening to this that's near him, I would be like, just have him go talk to people that have been, that might know the subject, outside of Rene Girard and a couple of the people that he congregates with. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I'm just imagining people from Peter Thiel's inner circle watching this podcast.
Hey, you never know. Peter Thiel's probably watching this right now. You never know.
Yeah, well, you might be the Antichrist, really.
No, dude, no. But that's what I'm trying to say is, like, you never know. There's not, the other thing is just there's no one else willing to talk about this because he's such a prominent figure in technology. And so to go, I think so. I think
didn't both those articles, aren't they calling him silly? Isn't everyone making fun of him for this?
I don't think anybody in our, like, in our group are.
Well, because our group is more concerned about, you know, what Jack Dorsey thinks.
Well, Jack Dorsey's not calling him out.
Well, Jack Dorsey's busy. I mean, he's a busy guy.
I think you got to make it okay for people to start calling out things. And I think the only way to start doing that, to get other people higher up the ladder than you, is to start doing it. And then people will see, oh, you can talk about these things. It's okay. And I think we just need to talk about this more as a community, because it's just weird, man. It's just weird. And I feel like every 6 months, like literally, I feel like 6 months from now, I don't even want to say it. Like, we're going to see something else. I'm going to be like, didn't I call it?
Well, what's the other thing?
That's what I was telling you. I think it's going to be the denomination thing.
I think that's coming, dude. Church is going to come out.
I think that's coming.
All right.
This is weird, man.
I don't know. If it covers, I like Girard stuff, so. I could find my brand of Christianity.
That's the thing. I think it'll actually work. I think it would actually work because he controls a lot of the groupthink
do AI confessions? Oh, dude.
Dude, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, I feel like this is, and that's exactly what the Antichrist does. It's crazy, man. Anyways, I'm going to stop talking. Sure, I offended a lot of people. Tyrell, if you're watching, talk about this. Like, yeah, don't just do these lectures quietly. Like, have like a public... Have a public discussion
come
about this stuff.
Come down to Pueblo and have a taco. We have a Luma.
Well, they have an office right there at the Littlefield building, so it shouldn't be that hard for them to come down here. Anyways, okay. That's all the stuff I wanted to talk about this week, because there's so much. We're going to get into some funny stuff. Keon, there's a cat who keeps crossing the United States-Canadian border. And that's loud.
Darn. This is Zero Avenue in South.
Have you seen this?
I saw the post for it. I did not watch the video.
Dude, this cat is crazy.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's just crossing the border illegally.
Yeah, he's illegal aliens.
Look at this.
Some of them are furrier than others, but they're all...
Look at him. People are having to explain for him. He just jumps that ditch right there. That's him right there. Look at him.
He is the Canadian border jumping.
Look at this. Look, he just crossed the border.
Well, he knew he was doing it.
Dude, apparently he's not even checking things. He's bringing mice over, and he's not even checking it.
Several times a day, almost every day.
Look at this. Look at him. He's so low, you can barely see him.
Carries on his very important work. We need to get this is what we need, the drone. We need drones for.
This guy says he has a passport. He has a passport. Look at him. He's going to jump it again. Where's ice, dude? We need to get ice down there. What's the cat version of ice? Is it lice?
mind-blowing. He kind of...
I've been working on that one all day.
...flaunts his recklessness. Just kidding.
Man, when you get lice down there... when you get lice down there, look at him. Oh, he's kind of cute, though. And he has been known to smuggle look at that kitty. Across the border and leave them how many lies do you think he has left after crossing the border this much, Keenan?
I don't know. I think you might actually gain lives when you cross the border.
He had no interest in the TV interview. Look. Doesn't go through customs. They're saying that he's not going through customs. It's wild. Anyways.
They could set up a little custom station there.
Yeah.
If they wanted to.
I never actually thought about that, but when I saw this piece was shared by Blockchain Boog, I was kind of shocked that, you know, most people don't count cats or animals as a border crossing thing. Right?
I mean, why would they?
I don't know. You could smuggle a lot of things in with cats, though.
I mean, they're not very big. Maybe with a large dog.
Maybe with like a little backpack or something.
Or like a moose. You could get a, you know, you could probably pack up a moose pretty good.
We had the top comment. I think it was, where was it at? Yeah, Great Ruby said, that's in British Columbia, other side of the country from me. That would be not too far from where somebody lived. So Nicholas says, we walked across that ditch and hung out with my sister-in-law's family living in the States during COVID when the border crossing was closed. That big patch of grass is part of the Peace Arch Historical State Park. He said it's a pretty nice park. There are some Border Patrol agents standing guard. They're checking IDs. But he said we brought a whole pot of stew and a bunch of other foods from our little family picnic at the park. But no one stopped him. Hmm.
Cool.
What do you think about that?
It was a little safe refuge where you could meet with Canadians.
That's kind of cool.
Americans.
Yep, that's all the posts that we have today. Keon didn't have any posts. We have one zine here. Let me make sure I read this right. If you were here for number one, you're old. -SNZ issue number 51. This is from Pleb Poet. 3 comments, 1,055 cents. Keon, happy zine Friday. Happy zine reading Friday.
Huzzah. All
right.
Yeah, I haven't looked at this one yet. She published it while I was rereading the stories, this week's stories. But I suspect there are many of things that we covered in here. And then I thought, I was confused, but I think there's going to be a week break at some point. Maybe perhaps after issue, maybe it was after issue 52.
Oh.
We'll take a little break from the zine so that Jana can do her art recharge.
Oh, it says it's communism.
Oh, that was, that was the classified.
Mm.
Maybe that's... That might be undisciplined or someone else. Remember we had an episode where we were talking about something where you were saying something was communism. Yeah, I'm like, I don't know.
Like 24 hours calling everything communism.
Yeah, that was.
I don't do that too much these days.
No, you went through a good one month period couple times. Of time where everything was communism.
It turns out I was right. It was communism.
Well, undisciplined. If undisciplined is right, you were right.
I think we were both right.
You went undisciplined?
I think we were both right early. And now we've got accustomed to communism and we just don't
know. We're just communists now. We don't even know it.
I don't think I'm a communist, but somebody else should verify that. And I think that's all the stories we got this week. Let's jump into the top cowboys before we get into the meta. Top cowboys. There we go. Getting on up. The most popular segment in Bitcoin, the top cowboys segment. This is where Keon gets to talk about his favorite stackers of the week.
Oh, okay. That's a new definition for this. I thought we just looked at this list of people that rarely changes. But, yeah, I don't see much movement as far as I can tell on the list. Seems like there's a lot of stackers in hiding, though. Winter Yeti is climbing. Gilma, Coffee Badger, Cars down there.
Hey, there's Justin Shocknet.
Shocknuts there. Aardvark.
Yeah.
F. Marek. Schmitty.
It's been a quiet week on Stecker News.
Feels like there wasn't a whole lot of news this week other than the war stuff, but.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump into the comments. The comments. So we had two comments, one from Vake, obviously. He said he was talking about when we were talking about unwinding Social Security pension time bomb. He said, I would tell the Social Security Administration to stay in their lane.
Mm.
What do you think he means by that?
I don't know. I would guess there's an interpretation of that that makes sense. I don't know what it is.
Does he mean that he's for Social Security keep printing? Or?
No, he's saying that the administration should stay in their lane. I think he's saying they're stepping out of their lane by...
bombing it?
By, like, not... I don't know. By trying to meddle in Social Security. Like, Social Security doesn't need to be a government thing.
Interesting.
It's just an idea about how you prepare yourself for old age when you maybe have trouble being productive on a relative basis.
Yep. We also had Maladam J. He says, I want a phone like iPhone 17 Pro Max, the weight and size and style.
Wouldn't that be heavy? Aren't those guys have the Pro Maxes
huge? I don't think they're that heavy, are they?
I don't know. I don't have a Pro Max.
I feel like they're just like a regular iPhone, you know, like an older version of iPhone, right?
I don't know. I thought those are like the chunky boys.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I feel like
the old ones
Weight. Yeah, the weight was also chunky back then, too, so maybe they're just, like, got back to the initial weight. Huh? At least that's my theory. I don't know.
People love that video.
People love that dumb video. We got Zap from Blockchain Book. Undisciplined said, most likely scenario for Social Security is that they keep printing money to pay for it, and then Great Ruby zapped. Yeah, I think Undisciplined's right. I think they'll just keep printing money. I mean, why not? I mean, what's stopping it?
Yeah, it's kind of what they've always done, and so why would they... Yep. They do different
why break
time?
Anything that's broken? Or wait.
Why not breaking the same thing that's broken?
Yeah. Kick it down to the next generation. Okay, cool. I think that's everything that we got. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
Oh, well, I was thinking of doing what I usually do, which is nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything going on. It's summer now.
Yeah.
It might be nicer outside, which is cool. Oh. I don't know if I'll see it. I don't think I have anything planned. How about you, Carr? What are you up to?
I saw the Project Hail Mary this week. I was able to attend a screening on Monday. That's why I took the day off, but dude, it was
worth it.
It was good. I mean, I tried reading through the audiobook or listening to the audiobook, but it never quite finished it in time. But it kind of reminds me of E.T. a little bit. Movie E.T., where it's like it's a feel-good family movie, and I would say it's that. It's like it's not better than The Martian, that's for sure, because that was Annie Weir's last novel, and so it's not to me it's not better than The Martian, but it's good. It's like a good family movie, I would say. It's a
that
good
was
family
the one that's
movie
done by Spielberg.
No, this one was done by the guys who made Into the Spider-Verse. They're the ones that got kicked off the Solo movie from Disney.
Okay.
But the writer is Drew Goddard. He's the same guy who wrote The Martian.
Okay.
It's good. It's a good movie. It's not bad. It's not a bad movie.
Which one is the Spielberg one?
What do you mean? E.T. E.T.
No, Spielberg, I know E.T. does, E.T. But he's also isn't he also doing an Alien movie?
Yeah, he's doing the Disclosure Day one.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Disclosure.
But Day. Yeah, I would say, like, if you want a good family movie, go watch it. But for me, it was just too, like, it didn't feel as interesting. Everything felt very predictable, felt very, like, non-committal as far as, like, there's one thing it's just my taste, though. Like, I don't particularly like movies that don't have any, like story arc that feels like, you know, friction to the main character. This one felt very much like, oh, we're doing this next, and we're doing it. Like, it doesn't feel like the stakes are there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's still good. It's not like a bad movie. It's still good. And it's Ryan Gosling. Like, everybody likes Ryan Gosling. He's a good guy. And, and the alien was, like, he's a really endearing thing, like E.T.
It's good.
Okay. Yeah. Similar kind of alien. It's got arms and legs and...
No, that's the best... I would say the best part of the movie is the alien that he makes friends with, and that relationship is the best part of it, and that's why it's a good family movie. But, yeah.
So you're going to go watch another movie this weekend? Is that what you brought?
No, there's really nothing else out right now. Everything else kind of sucks. Yeah, I think that was from, like, the South By thing. I think everybody was sharing that. Because I think it comes out today, actually.
Okay.
Well, did you see the Dune trailer? The Dune trailer
Dune
got released.
3? I don't think I watched it.
Oh, dude.
Does it look good?
Looks really good. I don't know. The only thing is, I don't know what they're going to make. I thought it was this week. I don't think they're going to make a... yeah, Neat Creations shared it. I don't think they're going to make a... how do you say... I don't know how this is going to be a movie, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, I thought part two was the end of it. I was kind of shocked to see that they made part 3.
They have several books. He wrote several books.
Yeah, but, like, see, so the girl, like, didn't he, like, leave the girl behind to marry the other one at the end of part two? So how did they get back together?
Well, they're still sort of in a relationship. It was, you know, the marriage was kind of a
non-committal?
Legal. It was like a legal thing.
How is that possible in the future?
Like a legal. Because I think this is pretty common, or at least in a lot of fiction, it is where you marry out of like obligation to your family.
Oh,
and to,
so he just married the other girl just because he had to.
Yeah, and he's still in love with this woman.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. So this one came out. The music's kind of chilling, dude. I don't know if you heard the music. It's kind of chilling. It's like brum, brum, brum. Sounds like
I believe it.
Sounds like King Crimson or something.
They do a great job with these movies on that.
Oh, yeah.
On that kind of stuff.
And then the visuals are always going to be spectacular.
Yeah, visuals, audio.
Yeah.
Story sometimes can be...
Do you think the future is going to look like that, with the stone everywhere like that, where everything's just made of stone, circular?
Why not? If that, you know, if the cost of producing things is extremely low, no matter the material you use, what material might you choose? And
that looks like it could have been 3D printed, though, when you look at those houses.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll be able to 3D print stone.
Yeah, maybe. It would just be like poop out stone.
Yeah, we can create some kind of chemical cocktail that you spray it out and it basically does what geology does.
I think the other interesting thing is like this movie comes out the same day Avengers Doomsday comes out, which is the Marvel movie.
Oh.
I ask you, Keon, which one are you choosing on day one?
I checked out of the Marvel movies when...
Oh, wow.
When they started doing time travel.
So you would watch this one instead of the Marvel movie?
Yes, I would.
Oh, wow. I would actually watch the Avengers.
Oh.
Yeah. This one feels like... I like watching these when it's like, you know, when I get it home and stuff, you know?
I like Aliens, Alien Worlds, all that stuff. It's like a great escape for me.
Yeah.
Most of the fiction I read is usually some kind of first contact fiction.
Anyways, that's all I got. Snackers, have yourself a great weekend. Keon.
Zap.